reputation, promise, outstanding content. But when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio in Los Angeles, California, you're listening to Sam in the Morning. If you would like to take part in the show this morning, dial 323-203-0815. And now your program host, Sam Hassan.
Good morning. As you can tell, this is a new intro, but not quite the way I wanted it. I hate my last name, man. Why did you have to put it in? Greg Rimpey. Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today is, hang on a second, it's Monday, June 10th. And we're here and we have a new voice in the studio, which is Mia. Welcome to the show, Mia.
Hello. Thank you.
Yes. And for those of you who have not listened the past couple weeks, then you don't know Mia. And if you have, then you know her. You've been here a couple times already, about three times, right?
Yeah, I think this is actually time number four.
Yeah, this is the fourth time. And now you're in the co-host seat.
Yes. Awesome. Now I'm going to be here many, many more times.
Yes. Well, welcome to the show. We love having you.
Thank you.
And I think we're going to have a nice long run, you know. So that'll be cool. I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, me too.
Yeah. You have big shoes to fill, of course. A lot of people loved Bridgetta and stuff, you know. But, you know, we don't look for the same people. We'll look for something different. So... you know that. So you just be yourself and everybody will be happy.
Sure. Yeah, excited.
Yeah. So you were in Chicago for a few days, right? You went back?
Yes, I was. I was home for about a week.
Mm-hmm.
I was producing and acting in a film, a horror film called Dead Girls. Uh-huh. And it was so exciting. I'm hoping it turns out amazing, but from what I've seen so far, mm-hmm. it looks really good.
Really?
And I look really scary, so.
Really?
Yes. I'm so excited. I got to kill so many people. It was so much fun.
Really? With a knife
too much
or what?
Fun. Uh-oh.
With a knife? Are you supposed to be like a murderer or something?
Oh, yeah. Way? I had many options of weapons, so you just have to watch the movie when it comes out.
Oh, you have like a whole... just the weapons.
Oh, yeah. Everybody dies good. A different way.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know what it is with people and violence and stuff, but people like that stuff, huh?
Oh, yeah.
It must be fun to film it, though, right?
Oh,
to
it's shoot so it. Much fun.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. But I mean, personally, I'm very squeamish. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't even watch horror films because they scare me and I'm afraid of blood. And, you know, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. So you spent a few days there. Did you guys finish the shoot there? During that time?
Yeah. It's kind of like a three-part mm-hmm. sort of thing. So mine was the middle part of it.
Okay.
So, yeah, so they had filmed the first part and then my part when I was home.
Mm.
And now they're finishing up the rest of it. And they've been sending me photos throughout the process. That's a good thing about being a producer. You know, you get the updates on everything and you get a say in things. So it's
so how did
nice.
You get to be a producer of this movie? I mean, have you had any experience before producing?
No, this is my first like producer title, so I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. So what do you have to do? I mean, in addition to being the actress, what do you do as a producer there?
Well, I of course had to put out some dough for it, which of course, you know, given the fact I believe one time we were talking about me loving quarters for laundry, and that's why I keep them. That's why I didn't gamble in Vegas. Just a little recap there, but it's worth it. I think it's an investment, and it is definitely a gamble
good
in
for
itself.
You, yeah.
But I'm prepared to do that.
I
went through my whole budgeting system, and
I made it work.
Another feather in
your cap, yeah. It helps when you have all that on your resume and stuff, you know, because, so where are people going to be able to see this movie?
Well, right now we're working on deals with, like, Netflix and things like that, so... Mm. Yeah.
That's cool. So they're going to have like exclusive rights to run it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you sell it to Netflix or something like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Good. Do you have good salespeople?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So far, even judging by like the pictures that we've sent out, people are really interested. So,
really?
Yeah.
Well, cool for you. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe you'll even win an Academy Award. Who knows?
For my amazing killing skills. Yeah.
Although horror movies don't really get any Oscars, do they?
No, I don't think they do. I'm trying to think. I don't know.
Well, our guest will tell us in a minute if they do or not, because we have a very...
She's shaking her head. I think she knows something.
She's a very qualified guest, and we'll get to her in just a second. So you got back last week?
Uh-huh.
And how was your weekend? Was it good?
This weekend, this past weekend. Great. It was great. We had a lot of fun. I have a roomie now.
Uh-huh.
I'm so excited. She's
She's in the studio.
Chicago.
Just say hi, Nikki.
Say hi, Nikki.
Hi. How are you?
Nikki's here. We didn't expect her, so we didn't make a special room for her, but she's going to be sitting in on the show, so it's cool. So you're from Chicago too, right?
Yeah, I just moved here 2 weeks ago, and I just moved in with Mia this weekend.
Sounds good. Well, you guys are going to have fun, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, Nikki.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So this is cool. I'm glad to hear that things are working out for you. And you've been in LA for about 4 years, you said?
Almost about 3.5 years, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Just for people to know, I've heard it a million times, but, you know.
Oh, for sure.
We got to update people on what's going
on.
Of
course.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the show, Mia. And
thank you.
I'm glad you're here. I'm really excited.
I'm really excited.
And I know we're going
to
have a lot of fun.
Yay.
For sure. Well, we're going to have a lot of guests this week as well, back to back all week. We're going to have Billy Hayes back, and he's going to tell us more about, because I want to find out about his escape from the Turkish jail.
Oh, yeah.
And we never got to the escape part.
I know.
So
I know
this
there's
is the
so
guy,
much ground to cover with
this
that.
Is the guy that Midnight Express was based on. So he was in the studio a couple weeks ago, and we had a lot of fun with him. So I invited him back. He wants to talk about medical marijuana and all that stuff, too. So I said, what the heck, you know, we will.
Yeah.
So we'll bring in our special guest in the studio, and we have Reba Merrill in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You'll want to get closer to the mic so we can actually hear you. There you go. You can pull it towards you, too, if you want.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, there you go. You see, you don't have to go under the table. Not necessary.
I have never worked under the table,
good,
honestly.
Good.
Good for you.
So, Reba, you're a journalist, an award-winning journalist. And so you cover entertainment mostly?
Well, I really started out as a talk show host.
Oh, really? Wow.
I did.
Where are you originally from?
Well, where I'm from and where I worked is a million miles. But
right.
I'm originally from Baltimore.
Oh.
Went to the University of Colorado and never went east again.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that? You didn't like the weather or what?
I didn't. I loved west.
Yeah.
I just loved it. I mean, Colorado was cowboy boots and handsome guys and just a different attitude than the East Coast was much more uptight. The West was much more open. And eventually I end up in California.
Wow. Awesome. So, yeah. So tell us, well, we'll get to your job in a minute, but let's just go back a little bit. So you grew up in Baltimore. What was that like? Did you like it there?
No, I never
didn't like it at all.
You
didn't have a good childhood.
I had a great childhood.
Yeah.
Were you a Ravens fan?
They didn't have the Ravens.
Oh, I was just going to say, actually, they wouldn't have been around back then.
We had the Colts.
Yeah, you had the Colts back then.
No, it wasn't. I never fitted in. I always walked to a different drummer. I wanted to be an actress. I got to do a lot of plays in school. Mm-hmm. And from the generation I'm from, it horrified my parents. So to get out of Baltimore, I did the only thing I knew how. I got married.
Oh, okay. And then you followed your husband. At what age did you get married?
17.
Are you serious?
Wow.
Well, you know, you're never supposed to ask a woman her age.
I didn't ask you your age. I'm not asking you how long ago were you married, so you can't do the math. You know, nobody can do the math. Don't worry about it.
But it was my only way of getting out.
Wow. And that's interesting because that's true. You know, it's like... I think it still happens, you know, when people try to get out of town and stuff and they just get married or even not being married, but just following a man or a woman, you know, and...
Most of the time it's the woman who follows the man.
That's
because
true.
Usually he is the breadwinner.
Right.
And you think your life is going to be perfect, and it would have been.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky.
I guess.
He walked out on me, left me with two little girls, and I had to learn to stand on my own 2 feet at 25.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And all the things I've done in my life, I believe, came from that time in my life as a single mother.
Wow. So so you were married, what, 8 years or so?
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, but I think, you know, when you get married that young, it's almost inevitable, don't you think, that eventually...
Not for my generation. I would have stayed married if he hadn't walked out. And not long ago, when I was out doing a speaking engagement for the book, I met a woman who said, I was the flip side of your life.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed.
Oh, okay.
She didn't have the courage to get out.
Right.
And she said my life was miserable. But I didn't have the courage either. If he hadn't walked on me, I would have never left.
Right. So it turned out for the best.
Absolutely. Wow. Every time I see him, yeah. I say, thank you.
So you're still in touch, which is nice, right?
Vaguely.
Vaguely, right. Well, you have to talk to him probably sometimes regarding the kids or something, no? Although they're grown by
they're
now.
They're all grown.
Sure. Yeah.
They can talk to him.
Yeah, I guess.
At least you got that out of it, your amazing children.
Yes, and two of them are in the business, so I'm really, really very grateful. One, my daughter, Cheryl. I worked with her for 20 years. She was my producer, my editor.
How cool.
Because all the programming we made was all video programming. Mm. I'm not a print journalist.
Mm.
I'm a video journalist.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Big difference.
Yeah. So you're not saying television, but video journalist.
No, television. Oh. My interviews played eventually when international took off in Hollywood. My interviews played in 60 countries.
Wow.
In every city within that country that had a television show that would take movie news.
Mm. Yeah, you were there.
No, yeah. My interviews were there. I never left. I went, let's see, New York, Florida, and L.A. is
That's
all
pretty
I had
much
to, and at the hotel of their choice.
So then you moved to Colorado after this?
Or yes. I married somebody from Colorado, so...
Oh, so you followed him
I followed
to
him, and therefore I could go to the University of Colorado as a state student.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times, decisions are made on money, financial.
Yeah.
And that's where I lived.
Mm. Did you... So what did you take in school there?
English. Yes, it's an art minor.
Yeah, and there's really not a lot to do with it, is there? I mean, you can become a journalist, obviously, with English and stuff, but today...
My career was not designated. I was not going to have a career.
Oh, okay.
I was just there. If I hadn't been married, I would have been looking for a husband. I mean, that was the two choices that I had. And so English was something I liked. I liked writing. I liked reading. We did a lot of reading. We did a lot of writing of reports. And and C-A-R-E-E-R was not even in a spelling test ever.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Well, that's cool. So then, you graduated there? And no, you didn't graduate. Okay.
No, but I kept going to school wherever I lived in the world with my next husband.
Cool. So how many of you?
Yeah.
I've only had two.
You've only had two. Okay. Well, I was counting three now. I mean,
No. I was divorced for nearly 4 years. I met my husband. We got married, and I said, there's only one thing I want from you. He said, what? And I said, take me away from Colorado. You see, I have this attitude that when I'm uncomfortable someplace, I like to leave.
Yeah.
And boy, did he take me away.
Really?
He took me to Sacramento, to Washington, D.C., to London, to L.A., to Phoenix.
Wow. So you've been around.
I've been around. Well, when I say it that way, yes. I have. And I went to school, even in London. I just went to school. It just didn't matter whether I had a degree or not. The idea is I just kept learning because I like that.
Right.
That's amazing. Good for you.
You got to talk into the mic, my dear. Yeah, because we can't hear you.
Me?
You got to move the mic. I didn't give you, like, mic techniques. I need to do that after the show, I'll tell you. But you just kind of want to, like, move over here so you can still talk to the mic and look at Reba at the same time, you know.
Oops, got it wrong.
Yeah.
All right.
No, because we want to be able to hear you because these mics are, like, very, like, you have to be close so they don't pick up, like, noises and stuff.
I think I'm
like
used
that,
to just facing forward because I'm looking at you when I'm talking, but now we have a guest. I'm, like, looking to the left, so
exactly.
I'm, like, trying to, like, get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, you'll get used to it. That's
all right.
Fine. All right, Reba, so then from Colorado you moved to around the world, pretty much. You landed where? Here in L.A. finally?
No, I landed in Arizona. Arizona is the beginning of my life changing. My husband got a very big job with Ramada, which is their with their corporate offices, and he was designing their reservation system.
Oh.
He's a computer expert.
Yeah.
And so up until then, wherever we lived, including London, in London I did voiceovers because I sounded like an American, but every place else we lived, I did television commercials because I discovered it was an easy way to buy Christmas presents. and not have to ask my husband for money or charge it to the credit card that he was going to pay for.
Right.
And so that gave me a great sense of power. I like that.
Yeah.
And so we got to Arizona and we got settled and I got a commercial right away because one of the things about local commercials, they're always looking for new faces.
Mm.
And when you're in a smaller market like Phoenix, it isn't that difficult to break in. And so I did commercials and finally I did a commercial that was so stupid, at least I felt that the words coming out of my mouth made me look like a fool because I was talking to a reclining chair as a detective in a trench coat.
Wow.
So I came home and I announced that I was going to get a talk show.
Yeah.
And you see, you laugh, so did my family.
Yeah.
But the thing is, at the time, we're talking about 1973, there were only 5 television stations in Phoenix.
Mm.
And so I went to the phone book.
Yeah, there was no like cable or anything at the time. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, go on.
And well, yes, there was cable because I ended up working for HBO. So there was cable.
In 73, really? I didn't realize that.
So I went to the phone book, there were 5 stations. I called 5 stations. I got a meeting with an executive at every station.
Wow.
And every station, every guy told me what to do, and then said no. But the thing is that I looked at it as a learning experience because I thought that all I had to do a talk show was to talk.
Exactly.
Which is totally wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. But it helps when you talk.
Well, only when the air is dead. And so I did everything they said. I took a typing class, and my typing teacher said, I hope you have a plan B because you'll never make it as a typist. I started to do interviews. I got a little reel-to-reel recorder and found one person to interview. And when they had a good time, they gave me a friend. And I interviewed for nearly 7 months a lot of strangers and discovered that I was having a good time doing it.
Yeah.
Because the one thing I will admit to is I'm very curious. Otherwise, nosy. So I want to know what makes people tick.
Yeah.
And I went back to the stations, and one of them said, you know, you're a good interviewer. And I held on to that, because he had just hired somebody else, but she could sew and cook, and that was not what I wanted to do on television.
Yeah.
I mean, she did a domestic. And so eventually it got down to one station, and he said to me, not yet.
Mm.
Now, I'm going to tell you what I did with that yet.
Yeah.
I looked at it. And I said, what is a yet?
Yeah.
Let's see. If I can drop the T, I could just put that S in that's right before it. And that's what I held on to, my yet. And I went to see him for nearly a year.
Mm.
And finally, he said to me, I'll give you a show.
Wow.
I had done a volunteer show for him on just to prove what I could do. And he did call me and say, you know, you're not bad, but not yet. And so he gave me a show. He hired me for 4 weeks. I hope you get a longer stay.
I hope so, too.
And he paid me $25 a week for a once-a-week show.
Wow.
And so I was always aware of who was coming to Phoenix. Phoenix was a big convention center, so we had lots of opportunities. And so I saw that Francois Gillot was coming, and I went to him and I said, I know the show isn't up yet, but the set's ready. I'm ready. Could I bring her in and tape this show? And he said yes. Francoise Gillot, in case you don't know who she is.
No, we don't know. I don't know either.
Okay, well, she lived
very
with
French
two
sounding.
Of the most famous men of the 20th century.
Wow.
She was Picasso's mistress, Paloma's mother. But better than that, when I meet her, she is married to Dr. Jonas Salk from the polio vaccine.
Yes, yes.
Oh.
And so I read her book, and I asked her, being French and living with these two famous men, does that mean you're great in the kitchen? And I don't know if you're aware of how French women laugh. And very haughty.
Really?
Of course not.
Yeah, but of course, yeah.
I was good in another room. And that was the beginning of my career, so he upped me to 8 weeks.
You got a good interview
that
way. That's awesome, yeah.
And that's how it started.
That's cool.
Wow.
So you started there in Phoenix, actually.
Mm-hmm. At Channel 3, ABC.
So that was television.
Always television.
Always television.
I never knew anything but television.
Mm.
So it just so happens I interviewed somebody. And then I went to a five-day-a-week show called Good Morning Arizona, which was right after Good Morning America.
Uh-huh.
And I interviewed somebody, and he said, gee, I just came from a show in San Diego, and they're looking for a co-host. And I sent a tape, and the tape came back so fast. My description was that ink was still wet. But they called me and they said, could you send another tape? And I sent a tape this time of Art Buchwald, mm-hmm. who you might not know, but he was a very big columnist.
Yes.
He always wrote very funny, satirical things about politics and politicians. And I had been his model in Washington for public broadcasting, and he remembered me. And I went out to the John Gardner's Tenors Ranch, and I did an interview by reading his columns and letting him give me the punchline, mm-hmm. which is what we were looking for. And this time, the tape didn't come back. And it just so happens that the show I was on decided that they didn't want to spend the money, and they decided to replace me with cartoons, just so you know what could happen to you. And so
cartoons.
And there I was, unemployed.
Wow.
But,
it's not easy in this business, you
no,
know?
No, it's
mean,
very
one,
difficult.
Yeah, one day you shine, and then the next day they just give you the boot, you know?
Well, it just so happens that when I talk about being in the right place at the right time, it's happened to me more than once. After the show was over, which was in June, my husband had a reunion at Dartmouth, and I didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, I'll give you a week in New York if you'll just go to this reunion. I said,
right.
Okay, a week in New York alone.
Oh, wow.
So I decided that I would go to ABC because that's who I'd been working for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got to stay longer. And I want to see Bob Shanks, who created Good Morning America, and I brought his book. And I go on the elevator, and there's a man on the elevator, and he says to me, where are you going? And I said, oh, I'm going to see Bob Shanks. You know, I used to work for ABC in Phoenix, and I'm just looking to see what's available for me.
Right.
Do I sound naive? Oh, let me tell you how naive. I did have the meeting, and he did sign the book.
Yeah.
And then I went down on the elevator. The idea is that when you're really high ranking, you have a high floor.
Yeah.
And this guy gets back on the elevator. Talk about strange. By the time we got to the bottom, he asked me out to lunch.
Are you serious?
Oh.
Wow. Went to lunch and
see. I need to start doing that. You know, I mean,
there's like only four floors here.
Yeah, pick up women in an elevator. I'll go to tall buildings just for that.
There you go.
And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I was looking for work." And he says, "Well, you know something? HBO is looking for an interviewer to interview people for the Lionel Van Deering's committee on the regulations for cable." It was still new, and they hadn't decided.
Right.
And so I get to meet Gerald Levin, who eventually becomes the chairman of HBO,
uh-huh.
and Russell Karp, who was the head of teleprompter, which are the words on the television,
right.
and Steve Elliott from Screen Gems. They approve me. They give me 6 weeks of work, picked me up in a hotel, put me in a hotel,
mm-hmm.
Turns out July 4th came, 1976. Okay. Tall ships, big fireworks. I was invited to the World Trade Center for two parties. One was the fireworks, and one was the tall ships. Uh-huh. Got to meet Henry Kissinger, got to meet all, not Hollywood people, yeah, but power players.
Right.
And I still worked, and I made money, and I came home, and I said to my, and they offered me a job. HBO offered me a job. In those days, the only interstitial programming they had between the movies was a guy with a camera strapped to his back running through Central Park. Nowadays, they have a full staff that supplies interviews about movies, about upcoming television shows. But in those days, they didn't. We're talking about 76.
Right.
And so I knew that if I took a job in New York, I would never have a marriage. No. And I liked this marriage.
Yeah.
And so I came home, and the whole topic of conversation was all about me in New York and HBO and offering me the job and never saying I didn't turn it down and how do you think I could do it? And sitting at the dinner table is the one child that's not in school, who's left, he's 11, is our son. Mm-hmm. And so when KFMB calls about me, he says, I don't think my mother's interested. She's had an offer from New York. Well, can I tell you how interested they got?
Yes.
When I called them back, they said, we need you immediately tomorrow. And I said, I'm terribly sorry. I can't come out till Thursday. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to do my hair. I wanted to check my makeup. I wanted to have the right dress. Because I knew that I was going to be doing interviews on television. And I did. And they offered me the show as the co-host the next day. Wow. All because my son listened to that conversation about that HBO offer.
Yeah.
Talk about, I mean, I couldn't have made it happen.
That's true. I mean, sometimes you just don't know how things are going to develop. You know, it's amazing. So from then on, you decided that's what you want to do?
Have done local television forever. I liked it. But my career at KFMB ended when they decided to revamp the show and got rid of both. Oh, that sounds terrible. Asked us to leave, both my co-host and myself. And he had been there 9 years.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And so the thing is that I went to Cox Broadcasting, and they had access, but they hired me to do a show and paid me. Mm-hmm. As long as I would do 5 shows in one day and barter the set. And I did.
Wow.
I went to San Diego State. I got 5 interns. Each one was responsible for a show. I must have done a good job because 2 things happened. One of my interns became the supervising senior producer of Entertainment Tonight. And the other is I won an Emmy, judged in Chicago, not in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got fired. And this one I got fired because I have a big mouth.
Did you tell someone off or what? What
the general manager said that he didn't like my choice of guests.
Mm-hmm.
I had, by that time, doing, this was the 4th talk show, I really wanted to do what Oprah eventually starts to do, is tell stories about people who were confronted with problems and figured out how to get around them. How to get help or how to solve it. And I wanted to do it, and it just so happens he didn't approve of my choice.
Mm.
I had female drug addicts who were neither hookers nor thieves. They were rich women with 10 doctors, just like today.
Yes.
And they have a doctor for every pain, and there's how they were getting all their medicine.
Yeah.
I had very well-off women who really were heavy drinkers but never drank until all the children had been carpooled and were home,
mm-hmm.
and then mixed a drink starting early, and when their husband came in said with a straight face, oh, I'm just going to mix a drink, would you like one?
Good.
And I think what killed him was I had lesbians on because I like men.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So he didn't want lesbians on the
and he
show.
Said God does not want these tramps on the air.
Wow.
And here's how I got fired. I said I didn't know I had to answer to God. The whole time, I thought it was the FCC.
There you go.
There I am, unemployed.
Yeah.
I go on after that to win the Emmy.
Uh-huh.
And he gets a copy of that Emmy for his office.
Wow.
And so there I am, unemployed. I didn't elaborate that KFMB in San Diego, the CBS mm-hmm. station, really fired me for my age.
Really? You think that was
the
case?
Oh, I know. The woman that replaced me was 20 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And so I was wearing that burden that, and I'd had 17 rejections by then.
Wow.
Okay.
That's tough, huh? I mean,
that I was never
still
going
go
to,
on?
To go back on camera again. And I had to figure out what to do with my life.
Mm.
I knew by then I was a good interviewer.
Right.
But if nobody wanted to see me, how can I do an interview?
Right.
I never thought about radio. By the way, I just only knew television.
Right.
But one of the things that happened that I was exposed to when I worked for KFMB is that they would send me up to Hollywood to do a one-on-one with a very big movie star. You know, my first big interview was with Harrison Ford for Star Wars.
Wow.
But the movie hadn't opened, and I didn't know who
yeah.
he was.
That's okay. You can say whatever you want on the show.
So I didn't know. Yeah. In fact, all I could think about is, can I please hurry up to get through this
yeah.
interview with this guy?
Oh, wow.
Okay. So that didn't tell you I was perfect. But I realized that only 50 people can do an interview, a one-on-one with a star from the whole country.
Really?
Really.
That's what you concluded?
No, I knew. I had done it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Is that the star gets tired, and if the star gets tired, everybody loses. And the studio is only concerned with everybody winning.
Mm.
And so a friend of mine from CBS put me in a room at Fox with a free telephone and a book of every television station.
Wow.
And I called a lot of them, and I have 55 television stations telling me they will take my canned material from Hollywood. It had not been done yet. It was still new. What Hollywood was doing was sending out clips. They weren't sending out an interview that somebody else did to a station as big as WLS.
Mm-hmm.
If I say WLS, yeah. she knows
yeah.
what that is. That's
yeah.
ABC in Chicago. Okay.
Yep. WLS Chicago.
So
I
had two things going for me. The stations told me what they wanted. They wanted the movie star. They said, we'll take the hype if you humanize it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 55 stations. And I only had to figure out one more thing, how to get paid.
Yeah. That's usually
there
the hard
go.
Part.
Yeah.
And so I just kept networking until somebody said, find any person you know who is working, getting a job from the studio, an outsider, a vendor, mm-hmm. and let them pull you along. And I knew somebody from the old days at CBS, and he was making trailers, and I went to him, and we had lunch, and I said, look, I have a proposition for you. I have this idea. It's called Video Profiles. And I know it's going to come from the same marketing division that your trailer is coming from. Let's partner on it. I don't want to touch your trailer business. I just want to work on this. He said,
mm-hmm.
fine. 3 weeks later, we had a movie.
Mm.
Dee Wallace was my first interview.
Wow.
Dee Wallace was the mother in E.T., and she was
right.
the woman at the bar.
Yeah, she's been on the station several times. She's very active now, right?
Very.
Yes.
And she's working, too, all the time.
Yeah.
And so the thing is, we go out, we do it, we get paid. Oh, and the stations all ran it. And they sent me back what we call air checks
mm-hmm.
and showed me how they used what I created for them.
Yeah.
Okay. And it worked.
Wow.
The money came from Warner Brothers, and he kept 90%. And as a woman, I didn't think that made me feel like a partner.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I left, and I went to another trailer company, bigger. I
mm.
now had a master that I could show what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I could run a division for you. I never once at this point in my career said, I like a job. Because I felt that I had proven
mm.
what I could do and who I was.
Right.
And he said, fine. He says, you know what? I got this contract from ABC to do this hour special on The Natural with Robert Redford, and I have one more shooting day. Why don't you go with me on the set? And I said, okay. How I swallowed, I don't know. And so I had never been on a film set.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know how to dress. So I wore spiky high-heel boots and a silk dress. And by the time I sat down with Robert Redford at the end of the day. There wasn't a part of my body that didn't hurt because one told me the floors were cement.
Oh, wow.
I did Robert Redford. Then he liked the interview. So Andy Keene at Kaleidoscope, that's who it was, said to me, I tell you what, why don't you go to Malibu and interview Paul Newman for Harry and Son? Mm-hmm. And in 3 weeks, that I did Redford and then Newman.
Wow.
And then he gave me Burt Reynolds. And it worked.
Right. Wow. Now, how do you get interviews like this? I mean, how do you
sets it up.
Really?
I didn't do it.
Oh, okay.
Wow. So did you become like an independent interviewer?
For the next movie, I finally meet a vice president at Universal. I have clips now to show her what my work looks like, my list of stations. And she gives me a film. And she says to me, if you fail, please have the courtesy not to come back. And I didn't fail. The film was mass appeal. It wasn't a big film, but it gave me At Home with Jack Lemmon. Mm-hmm. Jack Lemmon decides that he had the most fun he had ever had doing a publicity interview and writes a letter, which is in the book.
Right.
I asked his office if I could show the letter to the studio. And I must tell you, it changed my life.
Really?
Have a 2-time Oscar winner say this is the best interviewer he's ever had doing publicity.
Wow, that's amazing. So then you established yourself in the business.
For 23 years.
Wonderful.
Wow.
Now, so let's talk a little bit about the book. You wrote a book called Nearly Famous, Secrets, Lies, and Videotape. And when did the book come out? When did you
It came out in May, and I'm just finishing a new book that'll be out in the fall.
Oh, nice.
With secrets that I never had the courage to tell.
Really?
Yes.
So what are some of the secrets you're telling in the book here? I mean, are they secrets if you interviewed the people, you know, and they talked about it, or are you talking about things you didn't publish?
Both. I mean, I knew that Jack Lemmon was a drunk. He told me I have it on video. Mm-hmm. I never revealed it until he came out. Actually, I never revealed it to the book. He came out much later than the interview I did, saying that he was an alcoholic, and he told me, you know, that he never hit his wife, but he hit walls and doors.
Yes.
And he was extremely violent when the alcohol took over.
Wow.
And it's
which is pretty expected, right? It happens to a lot of people who drink a lot of alcohol and stuff, right?
Well, I think I figured out some of it because it happened to me. I'm one of the secrets.
Yeah.
I became the flavor of the month, and everybody was using me. All the studios were using me. And the truth of the matter is, a fear set in that they were going to find out I wasn't good enough. I didn't feel I had the right credentials. I never judged myself on what I was delivering. It was always what I thought they were thinking. Mm-hmm. And what I did was, and I have to make it clear that when I worked in television or I was a model, what I looked like was always important. Mm. So I was always slender and always looked great.
Right.
And
I still look great now.
And I got scared. And so I started adding a little sugar, which was always a part of my life. But I added a little candy after I ate every night. Mm. And the first year of working for a lot of studios, I gained 40 pounds. And then the sugar took over, and it wasn't enough. And by the time I destroyed my career, I weighed 209 pounds.
Oh, my God.
Nobody cared that I was fat doing an interview. You never saw me.
Right.
It wasn't that I was fat. Oprah was fat. That made it okay. It was the behavior. I had the exact behavior of an alcoholic. Mm. I am an addict. That is one of the secrets. No one knew, because when I worked for the studio, for the most part, well, little bit, I lost 2 studios with my big mouth, but, you know, other than that, my behavior was atrocious.
Really?
Really atrocious. Mm. I was cruel. I was mean. I was filled with envy. And if you ask me what 3 words describe me, it took me a long time to tell you. Surprise.
Uh-huh.
Surprise that I had a huge career because I didn't feel like I had a huge career. Ashamed because I discovered I was an addict. And free because I finally let it out.
Mm. Amazing. Wow. Now, you're an addict of what? Of sugar? Really?
But let me tell I must have been an alcoholic.
Oh.
I think I was an alcoholic. But when I started doing morning talk shows, I stopped drinking because I would have a glass of wine at dinner and I was asleep. And so I decided, I'd much rather stay up.
Right.
And so I just never drank anymore. Mm-hmm. So when you sober up in AA, they keep you going with sugar.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I should tell you a story about that if you would like
to.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. By now, I'm working in the international marketplace. Sony happens to be one of my clients. I get a call to do the job for the new movie Zorro because they wanted to create Antonio Banderas as a romantic action hero. And so they send me on the junket, and my job was to interview Anthony Hopkins, who played the father, only about the whip, because I'm making a half-hour show, and it's really all about Antonio, but we had some wonderful footage of how he used the whip.
Right. He is Zorro, after all, you know?
No, this was for the father. This was Zorro's father.
Oh, okay.
Anthony Hopkins. Right. Zorro had the sword.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And so I get the call, and the gentleman that calls me says, "Oh, by the way, Anthony likes to look. Could you wear like a low-cut t-shirt?" I said, "For this job, of course." So I go in, cleavage in place, sit down. I'm only talking about the whip, and he chops off my head. He was so mean to me.
Really?
I barely got one sentence out of him that I could use.
Wow.
I walk out of the suite, and on both sides of me came two executives from Sony and said, "What did you do to him?"
Oh, boy.
I knew it was in my chest, honest to God.
Yeah.
I said, "I didn't do anything. I don't know." I went on and I interviewed Martin Campbell and Antonio and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and I'm getting ready to leave when Anthony Hopkins' publicist comes up, one of the big, tough ladies in Hollywood, and you know they're there, and she said, "We would like to apologize."
Wow.
And Tony, and they don't call him Sir Anthony in the United States. Tony had not had his morning tea. And I will translate. Tony didn't have his sugar. And he was over the top.
Wow.
So I go on to interview him again for Instinct. And I'm sitting in the holding room. And a young gentleman comes into the room and says, within earshot of me, "Mr. Hopkins would like some cookies." So I went over to the studio executive that he told, and I said, and I'm working for that studio, so I had a little bit of power. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Would you do me a favor? Would you give him the cookies before I do the interview?"
Good call.
Yeah.
Cleavage in place, walked in, got the most amazing 10 minutes. All 10 minutes was usable.
Jeez, just from sugar. Wow.
So sugar can be good to you,
yeah,
or sugar can be bad to
That's
you.
That's true. That's true.
But if you cross a line and there's not enough sugar, which happens, which happened to me, it isn't just the weight. Yes, I'm amazed that I didn't become a diabetic. I am really amazed that I got help. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I thought I just liked to eat. I never thought, I was an addict. I do get into a 12-step program.
Mm-hmm.
And they took away sugar and white flour, and I detoxed for 3 weeks. I went to bed in tears. I went to bed with headaches. I went to bed hungry.
Oh, my God.
And I was living in Malibu on the beach, and I said, middle-class successful women don't go to bed like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's when I realized I was an addict.
Wow. Very interesting. I never heard of that before.
Yeah, neither have I.
Sugar is so dangerous, you have no idea. It's
really?
Like... And it I is love the sugar. New cocaine. It's the new cocaine.
I don't use it that much. Is it the new cocaine? Wow.
So it's about having a healthy balance, you know, between having enough sugar and, you know, not too much.
It's
so.
Cheap. It's available. And nobody thinks anything of it. Right. I have a new chapter called "I'm Addicted to Dessert," and you're all going to laugh. But the truth of the matter is, it nearly killed me.
Oh, wow. So that's in the book also?
Yeah.
So let's discuss a little bit quickly in the last few minutes we have.
About movie stars?
About the movies. Tell us what's in the book. What can people expect?
Well, I have my opinions in the book about these movie stars. Mm-hmm. I really want to talk about Whitney Houston.
Oh. Okay.
Because by then I was working for international, and as I said, my interviews went to 60 countries, and there are two divisions at a studio, domestic and international. And my interview was set up for the next day, and I got a call in my hotel room and said, I think you better come over today to the domestic one and do the interview. And so I did. And I have to admit, I set her up. Okay, because I said to her, gee, I look at your life, and it looks so perfect. You're famous. You've had everything. You've got this movie. And so I said, therefore, I guess you have the perfect life. And so she proceeds to tell me how miserable she is.
Wow.
Which I was really excited.
Yeah.
I didn't realize two things. A, she was on drugs when she did the interview, because I still naive. And two, that she canceled the next day, and I got the only interview for the entire world.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
She did,
cool.
Because she didn't, what I knew it. Once I went through the addiction, and it owned me, and it does own you, you don't make rational decisions. You make emotional decisions that don't come from the heart. They don't even come from the head. They come from the drug. And so when I was writing the book, I was really going to put the Anthony Hopkins story in about being an alcoholic. And she dies. I'm in Hong Kong on my way to doing, I do a lot of lectures on cruise ships. And I called my editor and I said, pull that interview and let me write about Whitney. Here's the thing. You don't give an addict, whatever she's addicted to, a glass of champagne on Thursday to celebrate her best friends getting a recording deal.
Yeah.
Little did I know. I mean, that's what I was looking at. There was no autopsy when I was writing this. I was only going that it was very obvious that she was drinking. They had pictures of her with champagne.
Right.
I did not know that she went back to cocaine. That's where I felt stupid.
Yeah. Well, but how could you have known?
Yeah.
You know?
But you see, you start with one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is that I stuck to just sugar. I'm not going to tell you I was cheap because I was very successful. I didn't like drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I have to take thyroid because I have no thyroid because I had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to volunteer to add extra drugs to my life.
Right,
but
yeah.
Sugar gave me, sugar was my friend.
Mm.
Sugar gave me comfort.
Right.
And I never acknowledged that I was fat. Never saw myself.
Really?
So, yep.
Wow, that's interesting.
I put makeup on every day and didn't notice I had two chins. Never admitted my stomach was laying on my belly. None of that. So that was one of the things that I found out, that they were only going to give me as much as I could weasel out of them. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite interviews was with Sting. And the publicist for the film said, you cannot ask him about the dinner party he and his wife gave so Madonna could meet Guy Ritchie. And I thought to myself, who cares?
Yeah.
I had read that when Sting goes out to perform, he is scared to death that the hook is going to come and that he's not good enough.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, my God. So I wanted that. I saw it in print. There is something I've learned. Anything you see in print is extremely powerful if you can get it into video or radio.
Right.
It has, it just has more power than the written word.
Wow.
So I sit there, and the interview's going well, and I said, you know, I look at you, and my heart is pounding because I really don't think I'm good enough to sit across from you and do this interview. I know you have no idea what I'm talking about. And he proceeds to give me the story.
Wow.
That's the advantage of doing your homework, at least for me, that I did a lot of research. After I sat down with Harrison Ford for Star Wars and didn't know how to kill time and said to him, gee, did anybody tell you how beautiful your eyes are? Never.
Well, he probably still remembers it. Who knows? All right. Well, Reba Merrill, the book is Nearly Famous. Go out and get it. I know it's available on Amazon and all other places and stuff. Sounds very fascinating. Foreword by Dee Wallace. and introduction by Pete Hammond. Sounds good. Everybody go out and get that. Reba, thank you so much for joining us.
Sam, in the morning is the best way I've had to start my day.
There you go. You see? Now, that, you know, from an coming from an interviewer, that's a compliment.
And you have such great stories, and it's so inspiring. I mean, just listening so far, I'm sure the listeners feel that way as well.
You probably have a few other books in you for sure, huh?
Yeah, once more. I get rid of the next secrets, which are all about me and very scary.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Reba. Thank you so much, Mia.
Thank you.
For joining me. You make it all more pleasant here. And everybody, tune in tomorrow. See you then.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning, which airs Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you would like to get in touch with the show or to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please email sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.